From WXXI News, I'm Michelle Faust, and this is Connections Healthy Friday. It's been just over a month since the start of the second open enrollment period for the New York State of Health Marketplace. Officials from the State Health Department report more than 194,000 previously uninsured New Yorkers have signed up on the exchange since November 15th. 1 week ago, the deadline to enroll in health insurance that begins on January 1st was extended until Saturday because of extreme weather across western New York. This hour, we'll touch on what's new with Obamacare. We'll hear a report on how new immigrants and refugees can connect with health insurance despite linguistic and cultural barriers. And finally, we'll take your questions about insurance and the new health law. It's all part of our reporting series, Understanding the Affordable Care Act, online, on television news magazine Need to Know, and here on Healthy Friday. As always, you can learn more on our website, WXXI.org/ACA, and you can join the conversation by sending us a tweet using the hashtag ACAWXXI. And you'd like to call in probably later in this hour. We can take your calls 1-844-295-TALK, 1-844-295-8255. In the studio with me right now, we have Christine Wagner, Executive Director of St. Joseph's Neighborhood Center. We've got Shannon Kelly, Health Insurance Assistor with Trillium Health, and Jeff Welcher, who is an account consultant at Benecare. Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
So I read some headlines of, you know, new enrollment since this open enrollment. I just wonder, from your different perspectives, I'll start with you, Chris. What have you been seeing since open enrollment started on November 15th?
It's been very interesting, and we're watching it very closely. Having participated in the first open enrollment, we wanted to know what was going to go on with the second. Just running some numbers, you know, up to date, we're seeing a mix of people come to us for assistance. Those who decided not to get insurance last year, and that they're coming back to do the cost-benefit analysis about, you know, their income versus their rates this year, and then the increased penalty this year and how that affects them. You know, just new inquiries to us. Interestingly, if I ran the numbers between November and today and October and today, the numbers go up double for us. People who in October were interested enough to get on to what might be possible as soon as open enrollment opened up. And that was hard last year to really get people engaged. So I think that's a tribute to more and more people are paying attention to this.
Do you see like a learning curve of people who, after we've had a year of this health law, and when it started last year in open enrollment, people didn't necessarily know what open enrollment was. We'd never had it before. Are you seeing people are understanding it better now?
Absolutely. I think they're understanding it better. I think they're also, if they've gone on the website, and as helpful as that can be, and some people navigate that quite well, they're also realizing that navigators can be really, really helpful in knowing all of the layers of this onion. And doing it on your own, you might miss some. You might put in income that you didn't mean, that doesn't need to be included. You might get help, you know, being directed towards a product level. So I think people are learning more, but they're also realizing getting help is really beneficial to them.
Okay. Now, Shannon Kelly, what have you been seeing since open enrollment started? Are you seeing pretty much the same thing?
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with Chris. One of the things I found last year was word of mouth. People were unsure of what was going on with the ACA, of if the health exchange applied to them. And once they had a positive experience, they would share it with neighbors and friends. And so I've continued to just encourage people to share that, especially younger individuals who maybe were concerned about the cost of their health insurance. With Medicaid expansion and those new requirements, it's really opened up more affordable health care to a lot of people who didn't think that they would be eligible before.
Now, Jeff Welcher, what have you been seeing? You deal with a little bit different groups than our other two guests.
Correct. Michelle, thank you so much for having me here. And Benecare is very happy to be part of this conversation. Chris put it very well when she said layers of an onion. There are many layers. I work in the mid-segment market, mostly middle-sized employer groups in the Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse area. Benecare also works with individuals. Historically, we've been known for working with sole proprietors. The sole proprietor insurance situation changed drastically a year ago. We're in a better spot now where we know a lot more, and we also, the unknowns are fewer and further between than they were this time last year, but there's still many challenges in this market. Just talking to Shannon and Chris in the lobby, it's amazing how much there is to this whole situation, and education is key. This is not look at it for 10 minutes once a year. This is more important than retirement. This is more important than housing. This is a crucial component of life planning.
This is something that you've been working with for a very long time, but it seems to me right now a lot of people who'd never dealt with health insurance before, they have to be diving into this. And I've spoken to a lot of people. I'm very educated on this because it's my job. It's all of our jobs. But a lot of people are having to dive into this who've never dealt with this before.
Absolutely. And diving in, this is not a simple set it and forget it type thing. This has always been complex. It's more complex with state, federal regulations, compliance. The IRS and personal finances are tied more closely than ever to health insurance, and that the IRS is challenging enough. The state is challenging enough. The federal government is challenging enough. Mm-hmm. When you roll them all together and work in the unknown of predicting health needs for future months, future years, it's overwhelming.
So we are coming towards the end of December, and that means that starting the first of the year, people are going to have to start thinking about taxes. And healthcare and taxes, more than before, are very connected right now. What are some of the things, I'll kind of go around the room, what are some of the things that people need to be keeping in mind? I know none of us are tax people, and we'll probably have a conversation about that in the next month with people who do taxes for a living. But what are things that you think people may overlook or need to be thinking about now so that they're prepared for taxes in the coming year? Mm-hmm. Do you like to start, Shannon?
Sure. I guess one of the biggest questions I've got is people who previously were getting insurance through their employer and getting their portion taken out in their pre-tax dollars, wondering how that's going to work out now that they're on the individual market. So just keeping in mind that those premiums can be claimed as health expenses is an important thing to think about when filing taxes this upcoming year.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
I would just say our language is becoming distributed in the community, that we hear a lot, those of us who deal with the insurances or lack of insurance for some people, is that the ACA or the marketplace has meant that insurance is going to the individual market. And what that actually means, I think people are learning, is that just what you said, I've got to do this myself.
Yes.
And I've never done it before, and I don't know how to do it. So that filtering down of, that I'm on my own here in many circumstances, because even with small employer groups or large employer groups, the rules have changed so much that they're like, this is not like anything I've had to deal with before. So people are really kind of on their own, and I think that's really, that's really very scary.
Now, Jeff, you deal with a lot of employers. They have to think about taxes involved in healthcare now more than before. Again, what are some of the questions they're asking, or what are some of the things you're saying they need to keep in mind?
This conversation that used to take 10 minutes now will take an hour. The hour-long conversations will take half a day. It is a major challenge for employers to understand their own taxes for their own employer group themselves. Now they have to think about their employees. Will they be better if they don't make an affordable offering? Will they be better if they do make a generous offering but for single only? Pre-tax versus post-tax, Section 125 plans, compliance for part-time versus full-time employees. Major challenges, again, it comes back to education, working with someone you trust on the topics. At the group level, they need to worry about the group as a whole. It's tough, though. I mean, we're in a community with many small and mid-sized companies where employees and their employer are their families, both, via blood and just simply by working together 15, 20 plus years. So it gets very challenging to take care of everyone at the same time that you can never make everyone happy. This is the pick the lesser of two evils type scenario a lot of times, and there's no way for everyone to win on the taxation side of it. The federal government has set up certain things where full compliance is sometimes not the fairest.
So we've been talking about taxes, we're talking about healthcare, and everything to do with understanding the Affordable Care Act as part of our series right here on Connections Healthy Friday. Let's go to a specific group, okay? We're going to hear a story because finding good insurance on a federal exchange can be a daunting task for anyone. But if you don't read English, if you don't know how to use a computer, it can be very impossible for some people. That situation is the case for a lot of new immigrants and refugees looking for affordable health insurance. Reporter Danielle Price followed along with one new American family who were trying to give it a shot.
Whereas if you're getting it through your employer, you're not getting that tax credit.
Tax credit is there, right? Tax credit is there.
Some expressions can't really be translated. Apparently, there's no good Nepali phrase for tax credit. But Prem Biswa is doing his best to translate the jargon of the health insurance marketplace into Nepali for his uncle, Doc Rasaili. Rasaili and his family have come to the South Ave Community Center to enroll in a plan with the help of Shannon Kelly, a health insurance assistant from Trillium Health.
14613. And a phone number for you?
In-person counselors like Kelly walk people through the process of picking and signing up for a plan.
Yeah, you can call the hotline and there's language available, but you have to request the navigator in English. And you know, a lot of people don't understand that those services are available. So even though they're there, they're not accessed for the most part. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that they're not comfortable with telephone translators, that they really, you know, miss a lot of stuff. Just understanding the basics of what the Affordable Care Act means, what the difference between Medicaid and Medicare is. Again, that's, like, difficult for English speakers to understand.
The Rasailis are from Bhutan. They came to Rochester after almost 20 years in a refugee camp in eastern Nepal. There, Rasaili worked as a traditional healer, what he calls a jumping doctor. He still spends days off from his factory job treating other local Bhutanese with problems like infertility. But Rasaili's wife, Kina, has several health conditions he can't treat. She plunks down a Wegmans shopping bag she's pulled from her purse that's just full of pill bottles.
One for headache, one for heart, and other for dizziness.
The Rasailis were on Medicaid before, but for the past 3 months, they've been paying for her medications out of pocket.
And how much was it costing per month?
$600 something.
It was costing $600 per month?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe above than that too.
The family hope they'll be eligible for Medicaid on the exchange. Kelly's entering their income information to find out. Even with an interpreter, this is tricky. For example, the Rasailis don't really know the name of the company where their son works. Kelly does some Googling and shows Biswa, the nephew, the screen.
This is going to be great detective work. I'm going to be so impressed with this. Does this look right?
Are they eligible for the Medicaid?
Mm-mm.
No.
And then comes
the
verdict. Not eligible for Medicaid.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So they'll get $588 towards their
what
premium.
What do you mean, $588?
This subsidy only helps pay for the plan, but not her medications.
So the government is
not what the Rasailis were hoping for.
$588 to help them pay with their health.
Every month?
Every month.
Then Rasaili has an idea. Let's just get coverage for his wife. It should be cheaper, right? Kelly changes the application.
So these plans aren't nearly as good.
Putting the whole family back into the application, Kelly calculates they'll have to pay around $250 a month. But then there are deductibles and the cost of prescriptions and co-pays for primary care and higher co-pays for the specialist Kina sees for her diabetes and heart conditions. By the time Kelly gets into details of different plans, everyone's frustrated. After an hour, her computer's dying, and the Rasailis don't seem much closer to being insured. Let's just get it over with, Rosali decides. He doesn't know when he'll have another day off from work and lacks the computer and language skills to finish without Kelly's help. By this point, Biswa, the nephew slash interpreter, is beat too.
I think in this America, we are faced very difficulties of language. Anywhere, we never understand 100%. That's 100%, we don't know. I understand like 10%, not more than that.
Finally, Kelly's back with the news.
You're enrolled.
You are.
I'm over here. So.
This?
Yes.
Done?
Done. So, but if you get home and you're like, oh my God, I made a huge mistake, we have 30 days to change this, okay? But you won't. This is a great choice.
Despite all this, the Rosalis were lucky to get enrolled so quickly with Kelly's help. Plenty of people who speak English, let alone those who don't, really don't understand the process or know how to find someone to explain it in the right language. Kelly's holding more drop-in hours like this, but unless the word spreads really well, lots of new Americans will still be left outside the system.
That was Danielle Price reporting for The Innovation Trail. And Shannon Kelly, you were very prominent in that story there. I want to know, when you listen to that story and we listen to one family and their connection with getting enrolled, with the different layers of having the interpreter there, did you, this sound like a story that you felt was typical of things that you deal with on a daily basis?
My experience working with the refugee community, yes. A lot of times, depending on how soon they've come to the United States, they still may be Medicaid eligible, so it may just be a matter of recertifying their Medicaid. But when it comes to those new immigrants that are here who are starting to make money and who are above the Medicaid line, it's a shock to them that they need to have this health insurance and the cost of it. So explaining, you know, there was one point during that meeting where I explained to them that paying for health insurance for their whole family was going to cost less than it did to get the medications out of pocket just for the mother. So it is a struggle to kind of explain how the whole system works. But it's just part of, I think, the whole news healthcare system.
Yeah, as part of our previous reporting, this is something that we've talked about a lot, that some people, and I wonder if you would agree, some people, they're coming from a different culture that doesn't deal with healthcare in the same way. So you've got the layer of not necessarily understanding the wording and the vocabulary, which sometimes, even if English is your first language, is challenging. But the fact that the premiums and paying co-pays, and that doesn't exist in every culture.
Yeah, no, it's been very interesting. And even young people who were born in this country don't really understand how they're getting free health insurance. I just think people are learning of the culture of preventative medicine and engaging in medical care to prevent larger medical issues. So it's a learning curve for everyone, I think.
Now, Chris Wagner at St. Joe's, you deal with immigrant communities. You deal with people who culturally haven't been connected to healthcare in the past. Does this story ring true to you? Does it sound a little bit different than some of the communities that your people have been working with?
Yeah, it pretty much rings true. While this was a Bhutanese family, we also have Bhutanese and Nepali, and we have quite a few people that come from the Middle Eastern countries and Africa, but it's the, wherever they come from, it's the same thing. There's a cultural difference from the countries that they were in terms of how healthcare is delivered, and then coming here to this interesting healthcare approach that we have. It occurred to me as the story was playing that there are some again, layers of this. You know, people come to us. People usually, a lot of times, don't come seeking insurance if they feel good. So they could come then and have an emergent health issue that needs to be done right now or taken care of right now that they might not, beyond the time, or right now beyond the time that's going to take to get the insurance through. And there are specialty things, you know, that people don't understand. Mental health. The cultural sensitivity has to be, given to the whole mental health situation with people coming from different countries. dental issues, you know, specialty issues. And what we do is if somebody has an application pending, we see them for emergent health issues. It could be 30, 60, 90 days, and you can't have diabetes hanging out there for a while. I also want to bring up the issue, and maybe Jeff and Shannon can talk about navigating the issues after enrollment.
Yeah.
That they're, you know, they finished. You said you're done. You're enrolled, Shannon. But then there's the understanding that, okay, you're really done with the marketplace right now. Now you got to deal with getting your cards, finding a primary care provider, getting a first appointment, and understanding that now they're dealing with doctor's offices and insurance companies, not the exchange.
Do you have people calling you later, Shannon, saying, hey, I didn't expect XYZ to be happening. I thought I was already done.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest concerns that I have is people paying their monthly bills. It's a new thing to get those bills and have to be responsible for paying those on a monthly basis to maintain your health insurance. And I'm kind of in a unique situation because I do work at a health clinic. We are taking new patients. We take, you know, pretty much any health insurance. So I'm able to redirect people there. With the refugee community, you know, they just opened that new health center, so that's a good resource there. But I think it's just the first step enrolling in health insurance and getting engaged in healthcare is another big issue that we could spend all day talking about. Yeah.
One thing, Chris, that we've spoken about before that I really need to bring up is we have these groups that are coming as refugees and people who are coming as new immigrants that are coming in legally that qualify for health insurance under the exchange. But if you are in this country without documentation, you do not qualify to sign up for the New York State of Health Exchange. You have some of your clients come in and say, you know, I don't have health insurance, and they have some sort of medical crisis. How do we address that? How do we help those people?
Hey, that's a great question, and that's a huge dilemma. Now, like Shannon, you know, I'm at a healthcare facility, and we don't ask questions like that because we don't care. They're a patient, and they need attention, and we will take care of them. But it's a much bigger question that I don't think the system is really looking at. People go to emergency rooms, and we know that that's a huge problem then. And I know Rochester has worked very hard to get emergency room numbers down to appropriate emergency room care. But for undocumented, they're going to, you know, to the emergency rooms for primary care, and that's not the appropriate, you know, solution.
Okay, we have a caller right now, Mike from Livonia, and he'd like to chime in on this conversation. Hey, Mike, you're listening to Connections.
Hey, hi. I'm listening to this and been paying attention to this. Obviously, I'm 47 year old. I have 5 kids. I work as a chef, and I see this whole notion that somehow as a society we can't exist if we don't pay for some kind of insurance that we hope we see a value in by getting sick so much. The whole concept that everybody needs some dire medical attention every day, every month, every year is ludicrous because for millennia we've evolved to be where we're at. We live an average of 70 years, not because we didn't have health insurance, but because we made smart choices in our diet, in our practices in life, not doing stupid things, not getting in accidents. And a lot of this health care, I think, is because all of a sudden, recently, in the last 20 years, since they started genetically modifying grains, people are becoming sick from eating the very diet that the government is pushing on you. And there's a whole book by Dr. William Davis, a cardiovascular surgeon, points out that grains in general are not meant for human consumption, and especially the ones that have been genetically modified.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. We can continue to talk about that. So he's saying that maybe we don't need insurance if we just eat a more healthy diet. I wonder what your initial thought on that is, Shannon.
I think there's a point in wellness and a holistic health care and taking care of your body, knowing what that means. I think those are important to maintaining a healthy lifestyle, and part of the shift in healthcare is to promote those practices to prevent illness and to prevent people from going to the hospital so often.
Your thoughts, Jeff?
Mike brings up some fantastic points, some of them pretty deep. I can't speak too much on the nutritional aspect of it. One point I heard him say, though, is health insurance is the only insurance you plan on using.
That's true.
On a regular basis. It is a unique situation. Mentally, you got to look at it differently than you do renter's insurance or car insurance or any other form of insurance. Our society needs to think of health insurance as preventing the unforeseen that might cause bankruptcy. He does make an excellent point in that our system is built to be used. We are one of the few countries on the planet that allows the advertising of brand name drugs on television. Right now, 20% of our economy is healthcare. One way or another, it's predicted that we'll go to 25%. We hear and see the frustrations that Mike is expressing all the time at Benecare, and definitely there's many new ways to look at it. In the nutritional side, that is just another piece of the puzzle, absolutely.
Well, if you'd like to join the conversation and do like Mike and give us a call, the number is 1-844-295-TALK, 1-844-295-8255. You could also join the conversation on Twitter with the hashtag ACAWXXI. We're going to take a break right now. I'm Michelle Faust. This is Connections Healthy Friday. This is Connections Healthy Friday. Thanks for joining us. And you can join us over the phone at 1-844-295-TALK, 1-844-295-8255, or on Twitter with the hashtag ACAWXXI. You can get all of our reporting and our Understanding of the Affordable Care Act on our website, which is WXXI.org/ACA. We've got several questions. You can take our survey and ask us your questions directly or send us an email. All of that's on our website, WXXI.org/ACA. Now, we've got a lot of questions already on the website that we're going to actually take a couple of those right now. We're going to start with a question from Barbara Lakeberg. She's a sole proprietor, and her income changes every year. So over the first open enrollment period, she did not enroll in health insurance because she found it very challenging to answer all of the questions and keep the health exchange marketplace up to date with her income. So we'll listen to her question right now, and then we'll address it.
My name is Barbara Lakeberg. I'm from Rochester originally. I was born here at Highland Hospital. So I do the substitute teaching now in those four districts, Rochester, Greece, Rush Henrietta, and Churchville, Chi-Lai. Tutoring in Rush Henrietta and Greece. I have my own little business that I started about 2.5 years ago, Sunflower World Arts Cafe, where I can do photography and crafts. I've printed up t-shirts that have the pictures of the cats on them in cute positions and with little quirky sayings on them. My income has been steadily getting higher. I mean, a couple of years ago when it was only $4,000, that was pretty small, and then after that about $20,000. And this year, if I can keep going at the rate that I was substituting, I think I'll make something like $35,000. When the health care that's available through the New York State of Health Marketplace, Healthcare Exchange, when the health care that is available through that includes a subsidy for people who don't make a whole lot of money, if I make in the 20s, like 20,000 or something for the year, I think I'm eligible for a subsidy. If I make more than that, I don't think I am. But because I don't know until we get to the end of the year what I'm actually going to earn for the year, I can't figure out logically what you're supposed to do about that. And with my pay, I couldn't figure out how would it work with not being able to give a straight answer as to what my income is this year.
That was Barbara Lakeberg asking us a question of what to do if you're a sole proprietor, someone whose income changes often over the year. In the studio right now, helping me answer this question is Chris Wagner from St. Joseph's Neighborhood Center. We've got Shannon Kelly in the studio, She's an assister at Trillium Health, and Jeff Welter, an account consultant at Benecare. Now, Jeff, you and I talked a little bit about this question before, and you said it's simple and complicated at once.
Yes. Benecare works with many sole proprietors. Variable income is tough. Variable income is even tougher when you need to predict it in the fall of 2014 for the entire year of 2015. Barbara's not unique, though. The right advice is advice many don't want to hear, and that is figure very low. The advanced premium tax credits, which often in the media get portrayed as subsidies, they are not subsidies. They are truly an advance on your taxes, a credit towards your taxes. Just about everyone does take these up front. This is where the federal government is helping you with your premium every month. They can be taken at tax year end. That is the safest way to go, although very few do it, and we certainly understand why. But the way for Barbara to navigate this the best is to figure very low on her income, and she may be pleasantly surprised when she goes to file her taxes come March or April, because she may be owed money by the federal government. Would Barbara and sole proprietors with unpredictable income, and everyone has unpredictable income for the most part, it's very tough to predict the future. Her best bet is to figure low. That way she won't end up owing money back to the federal government if she is granted this advanced premium tax credit that is considered too rich by the federal government, too high of a tax credit. She wants to avoid that situation.
Okay, Chris, do you like to chime in on this?
Yeah, I just want to add that in the best case scenario, the marketplace is flexible in that you can go back into your account on the marketplace and adjust your income up or down as you go, you know, 4-6 months into the year, and then, you know, adjustments will be made to, you know, to all of those estimators. So it isn't like you're absolutely locked in. You can make adjustments, you know, as the year goes by.
You know, in my conversation with Barbara, her concern was it changes so often and it fluctuates so much that she felt that she would be on the website all the time, having to update it and change it. Is that something that you see? Is that something that should be a concern?
Like Chris said, it's very flexible, and the role of the certified application counselor has definitely been different than I think imagined, in that it's an ongoing relationship. So when someone's income changes, they call me and we go over it. There's some, you know, flexibility within each bracket, but it's definitely something that you want to follow up on. And again, a navigator or an assister can be there to help you, because it can be very confusing.
Now, our next question comes from Anwar Pickett, and his question deals both with custody and health care. He wants to know if two parents who are sharing custody purchase different insurance products for their child using the exchange.
My name is Anwar Pickett. Been in Rochester all my life, born and raised. Spent most of the time that I've spent out of Rochester has been either grad school or undergrad. And so I came back in 07. I've been here working different jobs ever since. My four-year-old keeps me pretty active. The way it stands right now, to the best of my knowledge, I could not cover my son for a particular, he needs dental, right, as we speak right now. So the more and more I read about it, the more and more I saw that it wasn't going to be an option to add dental for him a la carte, as they say. It would require us to go through and choose his medical, choose his vision, choose his dental, all in one sweep. And that kind of stood out to me as, what if the situation like I had with my son's mother and I not being together, what if a situation like that replicates itself, whereby mom, let's say, is able to pick up the medical, but maybe can't afford the a la carte that maybe another parent could pick up. The website doesn't really stipulate who, you know, what parent is which. All it really accounts for is the income. And who's going to claim them, and reconcile the rest on the back end with the IRS when the folks file for taxes. So is there any room in there for having two parents pick up the different pieces of the medical and the dental and the vision for one child?
Now, Jeff, we spoke about this question before as well, and we've got more than one issue going on here.
Yes. In the studio, my eyes are very wide-eyed. This is the toughest piece of the features on your website. Anwar has a lot going on here, even without the need for health and dental care. This is a tough situation no matter what, when it comes to child care, food, housing. Splitting custody of a child is very tough. Unfortunately, this is a situation many times where lawyers do get involved. and dictate what's going to be covered by whom and for how long. He's got a multi-layered challenge here. What he's referring to in terms of true standalone dental, it is not available on the exchange. There are very limited available options off the exchange. Financially speaking, I've not seen many scenarios where standalone dental actually ends up paying more than is being paid in. My best advice to him would be to look at each year, 12 months at a time. Every fall, he's going to have some challenges, and there's certain assisters that can't help him, but he's going to have these are tough pieces to piece together. Anytime you're splitting custody of a child is going to be tough, and the IRS and the exchange, unfortunately, do make it a little bit tougher.
Now, Shannon, have you had people come in with that similar situation where they want to split the cost of health care and they're not necessarily together, their incomes are separate?
I haven't seen that situation. What I've seen more is the parent who claims the child on the taxes will be the one to enroll them in health insurance. And it's important to point out that in the essential health benefits for the plans on the marketplace, that vision and dental for children is included. So while you are unable to choose those a la carte for children, they are included in all the plans. So there's not a good way to split the cost on the marketplace between two parents, but there are ways to work that out between the two of them, I guess, and then moving forward, going on the marketplace to get the insurance.
Now, Chris, when I have spoken with people, especially when the law was first approved and people were just starting to get insurance, especially last year, a lot of people had not been to a dentist in years and needed some work on their teeth, because often, you know, something goes wrong with your teeth, it's showing that you're going to have problems with other parts of your body. Mm-hmm. Have you seen people with this situation where they needed health insurance and they needed dental insurance, and making that cost play out worked for them or didn't work for them?
Basically not work for them, which is the driver at the Neighborhood Center, and I know it's a driver over at Trillium, to get dental services in our two establishments, because so often this doesn't work for people. I've also we've been doing some research about the dental situation in Rochester, and there are four groups that we identified gaps of care for in the greater community. One is for Medicare patients who don't have a managed care plan and there's no dental coverage. One is for veterans who totally depend on veterans benefits. There are no dental benefits for veterans care. One is the uninsured population, and there are people who remain uninsured despite all of this work to get as many people as possible to do it. And another, the fourth, is a particular Medicaid population where the Medicaid formula might say, you've got so much work to do in your mouth, we're just going to go to extraction and dentures. That's a Medicaid formula that we don't necessarily agree with the philosophy, especially if there are teeth that can be saved. So, you know, we're paying attention to those four gap areas in dental care in Rochester.
You're shaking your head, Shannon.
Yeah, no, I know. Like Chris said, we're working on expanding our services, and dental is a priority. I often refer people to St. Joseph's. I know MCC has a dental clinic, so there are options for some people that I like to let know, since there aren't good options for dental insurance on the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. And there's the Eastman Dental,
yes,
that helps people with low income. Mm-hmm. This is as many questions. There are many complicated questions, and we'll get to some more of those. We are happy to take your questions as well. If you'd like to give us a call, 844-295-8255. We're going to get to the next question, and that's with Ginny Sopranowitz. Now, she has insurance, but she's going to retire very soon. And she's a young retiree, so she's trying to figure out, what do I do in the meantime before I get my Medicare? So let's listen to Ginny Sopranowitz's question.
My name is Ginny Sopranowitz. I'm a technical writer. I've been working at Kodak for many years. I'm 62 years old, and my question is, what do I do about health care when I retire, to cover the gap between now and when I become eligible for Medicare? I'm very interested in what the options are because I've not been entirely satisfied with the current insurance. Both my husband and I are relatively healthy. We have some things. I have had chronic migraines. My mom died suddenly of a stroke, and she had had migraines her whole life, and I know that that can be a factor. I'm looking for insurance as a bridge from what I'm getting now from my current employer until I'm eligible for Medicare when I turn 65.
So that was a question from Ginny Sopranowitz. Basically, she's about to retire and she's got to make some decisions in the meantime. She's not very happy with the insurance that she has right now, and she's got to have some coverage. What would you say to her initially if she were to come into your clinic, Shannon?
I would definitely encourage her to go onto the marketplace and explore what her health insurance options are. I know a lot of people have an option to enroll in COBRA insurance, which can be very costly, and I've seen definitely through my experience that you can get much more economical coverage on the marketplace.
Yeah, the COBRA costs are very expensive. Is that what you find?
Yes. This is a perfect example of something Benecare has been working with for a number of years, and it is far better today than it was 2 years ago. Barbara, being 62, this is a...
That's Ginny.
Ginny.
Yes.
Ginny is 62, and that is a... that she has maximum control here because COBRA, we refer to COBRA as an option on the table. It is not the best option in most cases. But COBRA in New York now can be extended up to 36 months, so that can get her to 65. That is option one for Ginny, but probably not the top option. There are exchange options where she goes through the New York State of Health. She may or may not qualify for that advanced premium tax credit. My guess is she won't, and the cost will be rather high. Typically, those that retire before age 65 are financially stable, and that is a good thing, but the downside is the tax credits will not be there in a lot of instances. Another option is off-exchange coverage. This is kind of it's off the beaten path, but a lot of times if someone doesn't qualify for a substantial tax credit, these off-exchange plans, they might offer wider networks that might, really above all else, they're typically easier to enroll in. She has many options in this case. Like anything, though, she wants to plan in advance, consider that COBRA as an option on the table. And one crucial component that I see gets lost in translation quite a bit, if she enrolls in COBRA, terminating her COBRA is not a qualifying event to enroll on the exchange.
So she needs to get in as soon as possible as soon as she either finishes her work, or during open enrollment.
Correct. She really... under any system, anything she picks, she wants to pick 2015 as a 12-month decision.
Yeah.
I would just add, I think I agree with all of Jeff's options that need to be explored by Ginny. But pre-planning, and this may seem, she's 62, it's 3 years till she's 65. Well, that's really not that long. And when people are pre-planning and, looking at the Medicare 65 eligibility, to go to a place like Lifespan, because they are Medicare experts, and it would not hurt somebody in Ginny's circumstances to go and build a relationship with them now, so that when she is approaching 65, she's fully informed on Medicare options.
Absolutely.
Now, when it comes to a lot of controversy over the cost of Medicare Advantage and what's been happening there, a lot of local Medicare Advantage plans being cut, what are the options that people have? And people are feeling that there are less options and that they're more expensive.
There are less options and they are more expensive. So I guess yes. We'll just be transparent and name the reality. But again, that may change. Who knows? I mean, this is such a flexible flexible situation for all of us. Again, I would just say, kind of watch all the insurance companies hook up with someplace like Lifespan, and watch those options. But it's a hard reality.
The world of Medicare Advantage has been heavily funded by the federal government, and the federal government is trying to dole out more money and the same money to larger populations. Because of that, the reimbursements behind the scenes to the insurance carriers for the Medicare Advantage enrollments are dropping quite a bit. What is resulting is individuals, their Medicare Advantage plans are going up 20 to 100% or more. This is a major problem, but this is similar to an analogy where when gasoline prices go up, going across the street is going to save you a fraction of a percentage. There's no great option when someone's plan, the Medicare Advantage, goes up 60% because a plan similar to it is also going up a similar percentage.
It seems like really difficult timing because we've got so many retirees. You know, we've got so many people retiring at this time and needing that Medicare Advantage and not necessarily having access to as many affordable options as there were when there were more subsidies from the government going to that plan. What do you think, Shannon?
I meet with a lot of people who are on Medicare also, and I, like Chris said, I refer them to Lifespan or Office of the Aging, but I do definitely promote the Medicare Savings Program, which I think a lot of people are not aware of. And it's a simple application you can fill out and send to the Department of Human Services, but it's an income-based program. There's, I think, three different tiers, and it can help cut down the costs of your medical care. But like everyone said, prices are rising, choices are lower. It's a different situation.
Yeah, in the world of Medicare Advantage, and sorry to cut you off there, Chris, you, more often than not, like anything with insurance, you get what you pay for, and we are seeing insurance carriers both locally and nationally playing a lot of games with coverage, so people want to be very careful. We're seeing plans that look the same that are actually changing behind the scenes. When these rates go up, we realize there's a huge push for people to move, and to reduce the premium. But just, we advise people to be very careful. You really want to be looking at two major factors on Medicare Advantage: drug coverage and the out-of-pocket maximum. An out-of-pocket maximum is the worst-case scenario. That's the safety net you really need and really need to examine.
I guess I'd like to tap into a WXXI philosophy, which is be more informed, be more everything. And in this circumstance, you know, Medicaid and Medicare were passed 50 years ago and they're still being tweaked. The ACA will continue to be tweaked because you don't launch something like this and have it launch perfectly. And my point about being more involved is the system can't do anything about tweaking these big efforts without input from citizens who are, we put together individual stories into an aggregate, and that aggregate actually drives change. So we have to be, you know, informed citizens and speak our truth about these.
Are you recommending that people send letters to their senators, to the congressmen? And is that how you mean speak out?
That is what I mean. Absolutely. You know, go to information sessions at any level of government influence, write letters, make phone calls, do all the social media to just say, this is my situation. I think things should be adjusted.
Okay. Now, you've been somewhat critical in the past, openly, of basically the way things have been going with the Affordable Care Act. And maybe you can kind of rehash some of that, some of the things that haven't necessarily been working so well.
Mm-hmm. And that goes right to the point of, you got a new program so big that it's not going to work. But you got to be loud about the things that don't work. In the initial and open enrollment, there was lack of education, lack of understanding of what it was. There was fear about, you know, what it was. The challenges that we face going into this second open enrollment period is renewal for people. There were renewal systems for all different kinds of people. People got six-page letters about how to renew or whether they needed to do anything or not. It was extremely confusing. You know, a case would be that if people had fallen behind on their premium payments, they couldn't renew until they had, you know, taken care of that debt. Well, if you couldn't afford it then, you can't afford it right now. So I'm afraid that some people might have lost their insurance, you know, because of that. Those things we've been vocal about, I know others have been vocal about, and we will get through those bumps. But yeah, there are things to criticize, and we really should do that.
Yeah, we just have about a minute and a half left, but I would like, Shannon, what are you seeing in this second enrollment period? Are you seeing about the same thing, a lot of questions about renewal?
Yeah, I would say renewal, still first-time enrollments. And I would like to echo what Chris said about, you know, I'm a grant-funded position, and so I work with the New York State Health Foundation. And so they are very receptive to any feedback, any case examples, anything like that. So it is good to get the message out.
Now, Jeff, I'm going to give you the last word.
Thank you.
As we are in this open enrollment, people are getting ready for starting up the new year. A lot of people will be enrolling probably today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing as the bigger hurdles?
I think above all else, individuals and their families just need to err on the side of caution. The federal government has made a lot of money available, New York State as well. You want to just be very careful and make sure you don't owe the IRS or New York back any of that money.
And you can get all of the information that you've heard during this hour on our website, Understanding the Affordable Care Act Project. That's online at WXXI.org/ACA. Follow us with the hashtag ACAWXXI on Twitter. And thank you for listening. I'm Michelle Faust. This is Connections. Healthy Friday.